of Christianity. As the sayings go, we're either so heavenly minded, we're of no earthly good, or we are so earthly minded, we're of no heavenly good. So the passage before us actually speaks, I think, really helpfully to this confusion. And indeed, when the New Testament actually addresses and talks about the life and walk of faith, it cites the patriarchs as examples of what it looks like to actually walk the life of faith in this world. And so I want us to consider what is before us this morning in this passage with those kinds of concerns in mind. We, over the weekend here, talked about believing. Abram looked outside of himself by faith to Christ. We talked about repenting. Well, now we're going to be talking about walking in this world. The first thing I want us to note, and I do have a few fill-ins for you this morning to hopefully help in listening and following along. The first thing is that we are often, what we see in our passage here, we're often treated in this world as believers as what I'm calling honored abominations. Honored abominations. Our passage opens with this very beautiful and moving account of Jacob and Joseph finally seeing each other face to face after 22 years. They see one another, and it has much to do with the overall theme of this passage. And we're going to return to that face-to-face meeting of Jacob with Joseph a little later. But what gets the most words, I want you to be attentive to, what gets the most words and the most attention in the final verses of chapter 46 here is Joseph priming and preparing his brothers to meet Pharaoh. Specifically, what I want you to notice is what he will tell Pharaoh, what they need to tell Pharaoh, and then why all of that is necessary. Look again at verses 31 through 34 with me briefly. Joseph said to his brothers and to his father's household, I will go up and tell Pharaoh and will say to him, my brothers and my father's household who were in the land of Canaan have come to me. And the men are shepherds. They have been keepers of livestock, and they have brought their flocks and their herds and all that they have. When Pharaoh calls you and says, what is your occupation? You shall say, your servants have been keepers of livestock from our youth, even until now, both we and our fathers, in order that you may dwell in the land of Goshen, for every shepherd is detestable to the Egyptians, or is an abomination to the Egyptians. Now, I think a fair question at this point is to ask, why did Joseph instruct his brothers to explicitly tell Pharaoh that they are shepherds, if, in fact, every shepherd is an abomination to the Egyptians? In other words, why does Joseph want his brothers to be immediately scorned by Pharaoh and the Egyptians upon first meeting? This brings us to that first subpoint under point one. That word there, if you want to fill it in, is scorn. Scorn. Now there's a lot of speculation as to why the Egyptians actually scorned the shepherds at this time, but likely it was simply a matter of just how different the nomadic shepherd tribes were from the urban dwelling Egyptians. In fact, archaeology has revealed that during this time, the Egyptians actually employed quite a lot of foreigners to shepherd their flocks and their herds. And this job would have been considered a very low-class job, and certainly there would have been no intermingling at all between the Egyptians and the foreigners, in that they were so radically different from each other. That's not a problem just back then. I think we all know, and we all have experienced to some degree, and we all live in the midst of this kind of class segregation, or we might call it regional arrogance, or we call it occupational egotism. Because it still exists among us today. In the States, there's things that we can think about, like migrant workers in fields, in contrast to Whole Foods shoppers. If you have Whole Foods stores here, we can think of, and again, this is an American reference, we think of redneck Southerners versus the elitist Northerners, blue-collar workers versus white-collar workers, or is it true here, it's Quebec against everyone else? We scorn each other for various reasons as they did then. But why did Joseph want his brothers to be scorned, to be considered detestable, to be considered abominations in the eyes of the Egyptians right from the start? Well, it was so that, this brings us to the second sub-point there, it was so that they could be separated. It's so that they could be separated. Notice what Joseph says here in verses 33 and 34 again. When Pharaoh calls you and says, "What is your occupation?" you shall say, "Your servants have been keepers of livestock from our youth, even until now, both we and our fathers, in order that you may dwell in the land of Goshen, where every shepherd is an abomination to the Egyptians." You see, Joseph wants them to make it clear that they are shepherds, even noting that this is not some new thing that they have just gotten into. They just decided to start farming and shepherding. But in fact, they've been shepherds their whole lives, and this is a passed-on trait to them. Their fathers were shepherds as well. They've been doing this for generations. And he's telling them, tell Pharaoh this, in order that you may dwell in the land of Goshen. In other words, he wants his family to be separated from, as much as possible, from the Egyptians. He doesn't want them to be sucked up into and assimilated into and intermarried into Egyptian culture. That is, this is a plan to preserve the godly line. This is an act of faith on Joseph's heart. This is living life in light of the covenant promise of God. This is life in light of knowing that you are a peculiar people called out of this world to be God's own special possession. Congregation, we're called to the same separated life as well. Indeed, as Joseph instructs his brothers, the Lord has instructed all of us. Essentially, what he's saying is, tell the truth about who you are and whose you are. And that will, when we tell the truth about who we are, that will most of the time be enough for the world to leave you alone. Great shepherd, the Lord Jesus Christ, he is despised. He is He is an abomination to the world. And therefore, identification with him will likely get you neatly placed on the periphery of culture. A shepherd in the day of our forefathers. You young people, I want this to be instructive to you. Some of you, or most of you, are going to return from camp and you're going to head right back into a new school year. Maybe this coming year, this very week, you're going to start in a new school, a new grade. You have a new class. Maybe others are going to start a new job. Join new sports teams, in these social settings, whether we're talking about you meet a new guy, you meet a new girl, the scriptures ultimately call us to tell the truth graciously and humbly about who you are and who you are. It's one of the most effective ways to begin consistently live that biblically separated life. But I want you to notice, interestingly here, that we see that while the brothers are abhorred, you notice that they are still honored. Pharaoh tells Joseph to settle them in the best area of Egypt, Goshen. And then he tells Joseph in verse 6, if you know any able men among them, put them in charge of my livestock. Again, history tells us that being put in charge of Pharaoh's livestock is actually a royal, authoritative position of honor. And thus, it is an interesting juxtaposition here. Just as Joseph, the nomadic shepherd slave, that's who he was, he has become the ruler of the land of Egypt. So now, also his brothers, who are an abomination to the Egyptians because they are shepherds, they're now being offered positions of authority in Pharaoh's kingdom. That's why I titled this point, they are honored abominations. They are being honored even while they're being detested. They're loved to some degree and hated at the same time. In fact, they are a picture of how we will often be treated in this world. I've had quite a few friends and congregants who were mocked and scorned and ridiculed for their faith in their workplaces. And yet, they were also the only ones that the owner would trust with the money at the end of the month. There was something about them, even though they were mocked by the very same person that trusted them, that person saw something different in them. The Christian, there is to be something different about you as well. Something different that draws the world to you. They recognize you as different. And that something is to be the love and grace of God. It's to be a growing, Christ-likeness. And difference about us. And yet at the same time, people will hate us, they will be uncomfortable around us, and they will want to leave us alone. But we are not to try to nullify that tension. In fact, we are to be holy. We are to be a set apart people. We are a pure one author has said, and it's a little bit longer quote, I'll try to read it carefully so you can follow along. God must be prepared to incur people's hostility and the unpopularity that goes with it. But the gospel insists that we are to be different from the world around us and not crave to be like it. The world's culture and values are alien to the teaching of Christ. And no matter the amount of mental gymnastics we try, we can never make otherwise. So in essence, to finish this point, Joseph has called his family simply, if you want the summary of this, he's called his family to tell the truth about who they actually were. And that is what Jesus is calling us, his family, his brother, to do as well. Though we may be honored at times, we will always be abominations to the world. We will always be abominations in a world that despises and detests the great shepherd, Jesus Christ. Now there will be a little more to say on this, and I want to return to that theme a bit more briefly this evening, but I want to turn next to the second point this morning, because this also means that we will always exist in this life as settled sojourners. Settled sojourners. As we move into chapter 47, we come to the actual event of Joseph introducing his family to Pharaoh, and just as Joseph predicted would happen, Pharaoh asks them what their occupation is. And as Joseph has instructed them, they tell Pharaoh that they are shepherds as their fathers were, and they note that they are only coming to sojourn in the land. In other words, the verse 4 has it in the NIV, to live for a while. There's differences in translation, but the sense is guided. The words here in the Hebrew are guided by this idea of we're not planning to be here long. We're asking if we can dwell here for a while, if we can sojourn among you. Some translations go ahead and say, if we can settle here. The sense is that they're just passing through. This isn't an idea of a permanent dwelling place. And so very probably, to their surprise, not only does Pharaoh notice and agree to the land of Goshen, but he doesn't just grant that they can sojourn and dwell there. That's what they asked for. But he instructs Joseph to settle his family there. In other words, Pharaoh's idea is a bit more permanent. No, settle there. That's your land. That is, they were, and they are now, the sons of Jacob are now, and this is that first sub-point, they are established. They are established in the lands of Egypt. So we are seeing the family of Israel, and notice this, it's because of their relationship to Joseph. The family of Israel, because of their relationship to Joseph, getting more than they could have ever asked for or think of. Again, really the sense there is that they just wanted to sojourn and dwell in the land for a time, live for a while there. Now they are being given honorable positions, caring for Pharaoh's livestock, and they also now have permanent homes. Again, this is exceedingly abundantly above what they could ask or think. In the same way, because of our relationship with Jesus Christ, we, the church, are given much more than we could ever hope for or think. You see, sometimes our introduction to Jesus comes at a time when we have a certain temporal felt need. We come to him because maybe we're going through a time in a failed marriage, loneliness, getting our lives back together, or we want to break a bad habit that's plagued us for a bit of time, the Lord will use those things in our lives to bring us to Himself. But in Christ, we actually get so much more from the Father than that. Because of our relationship with Jesus Christ, we not only get help with these temporal matters, but we get wisdom, we get justification, we get sanctification, we get redemption. More than we could have ever hoped for. More than we could have ever asked for or dreamed of. But the family of Joseph being settled can also be instructive to us as we live in this world. Sometimes we are tempted to think that we are doing something wrong if everything is going right. We hear stories of saints, past and present, who seem to transcend the world, living in caves, eating just whatever is provided at the moment for them, being totally detached and unaffected by the regular daily life that the rest of us seem to struggle with. We need to recognize that that is not normal Christianity. And it is not wrong to be established and living in the world. And seeing Jacob and his sons being settled in Goshen here can help us think through this a bit. Think about this. Remember, it was Joseph who told them to tell the truth to Pharaoh so that they could dwell in the land of Goshen, so that they could remain a holy and a separated people. That is to say, they are not settling there because they are compromising the truth. They're settling there precisely because they did not compromise the truth. In fact, being settled there is actually part of it. We talked about this on the first night with the foreshadowing of the Exodus. Actually, part of being settled there is part of the unfolding covenant plan of God. Their existence as settled in Goshen can be instructive to us in that we see believers who are settled but still separate. And that really is the balance that we are to strike as the people of God living in this world. And to strike that balance, we constantly need, though, to recognize that throughout our time here in this world, for all the days of our lives, this brings us to the very last fill and last subpart, we are still pilgrims. At the end of the day, after everything is said, no matter what our circumstances are, we are still pilgrims. Hebrews chapter 11 mines the patriarchal narratives. In other words, it goes right into these stories of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph. Their lives, pictures of how it was for them to live in this world, and it does so to illustrate the life and the walk of faith. In other words, it's the Spirit Himself that turns us back to these guys and says, look, that's what living by faith is. That's how believers live in this world. And the main point that that chapter in Hebrews brings forth is that whether they were settled somewhere or whether they were at a time in their life they were vagabonds, whether they had riches or whether they were in poverty in this world, they were all seeking in their lives on earth ultimately a city and a reality to come. And indeed, that is the essence. That is the essence of walking the essence of life in the covenant of grace. We see this so beautifully in Jacob's interaction with Pharaoh here. This scene that is before us is powerful, although it is subtle. Here is the ruler of the known world, Pharaoh, being met by the oldest living patriarch of the covenant of grace. The king of Egypt face to face with the grandson of Abraham. Egypt and Israel in conversation. The people of the world, the people of God, interacting together. And as we read here in verse 7, Joseph brings his aged, frail father in, who had to be carried around because he was so weak at this point of his life. The text tells us Joseph stands before Pharaoh. And instead of throne room etiquette, instead of small talk and niceties, instead of waiting for a sign or permission to speak, we read that the first thing that happens on this evening is that Jacob blesses Pharaoh. This is a humble believer blessing the most powerful man in the world. I don't know if it was the appearance of a 130-year-old man standing before him, or the shock of a man who just launched into a blessing upon him. The Pharaoh asks Jacob, essentially, how old are you? How many are the numbers of the days and years of your life? Jacob's response here is interesting and it is instructive to us. In verse 9, the days of the years of my sojourning are 130. Few and evil have been the days of the years of my life. They have not changed the days of the years of the life of my fathers in the days of their sojourning. Congregation, that is not the complaint of an ungrateful old man. Rather, that is a mature statement about life in this world. One author said that is the unvarnished truth. Jacob's 130 years were few in light of his father's 180 years, his grandfather's 175 years. They were very hard, and they were very evil years. Remember, Jacob was the victim of favoritism as a boy, in that his dad loved his brother more than him. His mother pushed him into deceiving his own father, stealing from his brother. His brother Esau sought to literally kill him, causing him to run away from home. His uncle Laban deceived him into marrying both of his daughters. He had to run away from Laban. Get away, even as an adult, to get back to the promised land. As soon as he comes back into the promised land, his father dies. His His sons then go on and commit mass murder. His sons then deceive him into thinking his favorite son has been killed. If there was ever a parent who had wayward children, this is the man. That's not an easy life. That's a life full of hardship and trial. But the bright point in this characterization of his short, hard life is that he says twice, I am just sojourning here. That is, as son of the covenant, he owns his steps and the reality that he is merely a pilgrim traveler coming through the trial that is this life. And that is what the New Testament instructs us to see in the lives of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Pastor Wilkinson read this passage this morning. Hear it again. These all died in faith, not having received the things that were promised, but only seeing them and reading them from afar, acknowledging that they were strangers and exiles on earth. For people who speak in that way make it clear that they are seeking a homeland. Now, if they had been thinking of that land from which they had gone out, they would have had opportunity to return. But as it is, they desire a better country. That is, heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to call their God, for he has prepared for them a city. I remember Pastor Kingswood speaking out of our summer camp, our family camp, and he quoted John MacArthur, who I think the context of the quote was that as MacArthur has gotten older, there is less levity and humor in his messages, and people wanted to know what there seems to be an increasing shame in the tradition. He said, the answer was sticks in my mind all the time. Pastor Kingswood quoted, yes, there's an accumulated sadness from living in this world. It does change us. Joseph was, Jacob was speaking of the unvarnished truth. The people of God in this life, we are to be settled soldiers. That's the normal Christian life. We walk by faith and not by sight. We may be settled into homes and jobs and communities, or we may be chosen to suffer and be unsettled. But in the heart of all true believers, there will always be, as Psalm 84 5 states, that there will always be pilgrims for us. That is, this life is not all that there is. This world is not our final home. No matter how settled we get, we will always be still sojourners, exiles, pilgrims. That is the way of the covenant people of God. And that is the life that God is calling you to. have been promised in Jesus Christ. Someone look at my life and say, this guy seems to be here but not here. Seems to have a treasure elsewhere. We're going to briefly look at a few more matters that concern our walking by faith in this world this evening, Lord willing. But now let's just bow. God, you are the one who first put your love upon us. Somehow you, as you are, you knew us, and you fashioned us, and you purposed us to be brought into relationship with you. Since you come into our lives, you have been calling us to more and more put our eyes upon Christ, the author and finisher of our faith. Keep our eyes on the prize of that upward calling of Christ. To eagerly anticipate that day when we will finally be brought to glory, wherein all of the pain and the suffering and the sin and the tragedy of this life will be as a vapor, the glory that it sees. Lord, strengthen our faith so that we might walk more consistently in this reality. Truly teach us how to walk by faith, desiring that greater country. Thank you for our brethren of old. Thank you that you would show us the lives and encourage us there.